Okay. Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk about my favourite subject, biofuels. I'm sure you agree it's a very interesting, a very challenging topic. What I'll try and do in this 15 minutes that I've got, which in itself is a challenge to talk about a topic of this nature, is to give you an idea, give you a possibly more global perspective, give you some idea of what BP is doing in this space, and some of the underlying drivers and rationale behind that. Which I think is important to understand, because I think it has broader implications and broader applications. So if I want to start possibly by drawing out some of the key messages of relating to biofuels coming out of BP's recently published energy outlook to 2030. This was a piece of analysis that was conducted internally within BP that covered all the energy sectors, global energy sectors, going out to 2030. But specifically looking at, as far as biofuels is concerned, I mean, one of the key messages, certainly we took away from this, was firstly, that biofuels develops by 2030 a really material level of supply. You're looking at 6.5 million barrels a day of oil equivalent. So, give you some idea of the scale, that puts it in number four place, behind the likes of Saudi Arabia, Russia, and the US, the three top oil producers today. I think the other aspect is the rate of growth. It is the fastest growth rate of liquid fuels going forward to 2030. I think that gives an idea of the potential materiality of biofuels going forward. Driven by the twin policy drivers of both climate change, tackling climate change in the transport sector, and energy security, which I'll come back and touch on a little bit later. I think the other point that's worth considering is right now biofuels globally forms about 5% by volume of all global liquid transport road transport fuel supply, or just under about 3% by energy. When you start comparing that versus other alternative fuels, such as LPG, such as CNG, compressed natural gas, that's actually quite instructive, and that actually speaks to one of the biofuels as key strengths, in the fact that the biofuels, being a liquid renewable fuel, is largely compatible with the existing supply infrastructure, the existing vehicle park, and as such, this largely cuts through the Gordian knot that is facing a lot of the challenge in the road transport sector when you want to introduce new fuels, new vehicles. The rate of the turnover of the vehicle park operates very much on a long wavelength dynamic. The average lifetime of a car in Europe is 12 years. In the US, it's 18 years. So, if you're trying to introduce a new vehicle into that car park, it takes a long time to change over the car park. Again, if you're trying to introduce a new fuel, be it a gaseous fuel, be it CNG, be it hydrogen, likewise, you have a new fuel infrastructure to introduce. Again, that takes time. And I think that speaks to some of the benefits or the success that we've seen in biofuels biofuels to date. I said I wanted to talk a little bit about, or touch back on one of the key policy drivers behind biofuels, and that is really relating to climate change, tackling greenhouse gas emissions in the road transport sector. I think the fundamental point that this slide tries to make is that there are no silver bullets in terms of tackling greenhouse gas emissions in the road transport sector. It's a phrase that's often used, and then as soon as it leaves people's lips, they then forget about it and they start promoting their particular solution. And I do have to say, it is a facet that we recognise, particularly in the UK debate. We see the so-called hype cycle, where there are favourite technologies that are very much de rigueur of the moment, and then the hype cycle then passes on. When I first started working in this area 5 years ago, it was hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, and there were serious commentators at that point saying that or predicting that hydrogen fuel cell vehicles would be commercially available in 2012. I think things have moved on. Biofuels went through their hype cycle. There was a time where biofuels could do no ill, do no wrong, no differentiation behind biofuels, and then there was very much the anti cycle to that. I think we're observing the same thing potentially in electric vehicles right now. I mean, what this specific graphic looks at, and it's a piece of work that came out of a wider piece of work that BP did, looking at long-term technologies, is to look at various fuel and vehicle combinations through two lenses. Firstly, well-to-wheel greenhouse gas emissions, and then cost to the consumer. And I think fundamentally, what this demonstrates is that the continuing evolution of the internal combustion engine, particularly gasoline, particularly petrol, and advances in gasoline, advanced gasoline engine design, so we're talking about downsizing, turbocharging, in conjunction with hybridization, the various forms of hybridization, starting from mild, going through to fuel, going through to plug-in hybrids, in conjunction with biofuels, can deliver a greenhouse gas emission reduction that is equivalent to, and in some cases could be better than, dedicated battery electric vehicles at a substantially reduced cost to the consumer and a substantially reduced risk, substantially reduced technical or technology risk. So again, this is not about, is this biofuels or is this electric vehicles? This is not about electrification is not going to happen in the road transport sector. It will happen. It will happen in a variety of forms. Possibly the most compelling option is going forward in terms of hybridization, certainly in the near term. But this is fundamentally about a combination of technology actions that are going to be required in the road transport space to deliver greenhouse gas emissions going forward. Very much back to my original point, there are no silver bullets here. It's going to have to be a combination of actions. I then want to talk a little bit about what we're doing in this space in the biofuel space. As you heard in my introduction, we first formed our biofuels business unit in 2006, and effectively since then we've been on a journey in terms of understanding how a company like BP can most powerfully participate in this space, And what I'll talk about now is what we're doing, and then in the next couple of slides, why we're doing it. We have effectively three strategic strands in the biofuel space. The first one is in Brazil. We had since 2008 a 50% share in Tropical. This is a sugar mill ethanol plant in the Goiás state in Brazil. And then most recently, you will have no doubt heard that we've acquired CNAA, which gives us a further three mills in Minas Gerais and the Goiás states, two of which are operational, one of which is under construction. All four of these mills will be expanded out to a final crush capacity of 5 million tons per annum of cane crush, giving each a ethanol equivalent production of about 480 million litres per year, so just under 2 million litres in total. And indeed, you know, as is common with sugarcane operations in Brazil, not only will they be producing ethanol and sugar, but also converting the bagasse into power through cogen facilities, and going forward there's the option of using that bagasse and other residues to convert those into biofuels themselves. The other strand is cellulosic ethanol in the US. We started this journey through developing a technology relationship with Verenium. This was going back to 2008. Verenium was one of the leaders in cellulosic ethanol technology development, and we actually ended up by acquiring Verenium in July of last year. This provides us with firstly a world-class research and development facility in San Diego on the west coast of the US, a operating cellulosic demonstration plant in Jennings in Louisiana, and we're in the process of building a commercial scale cellulosic ethanol plant in Florida in the Highlands County. So this will be we intend breaking ground on this plant at the end of this year, all being well. This will be a 36 million gallon plant, or 136 million million liters. The primary feedstock of this plant will be energy grass. So this will be energy cane and napier grass, and you can see a picture of energy cane actually growing on our trial sites in the site in Highlands County, and that you can just make out is me. So that demonstrates that both are real, if you like. In terms of where we are right now, we're actually in the process of establishing farm operations on that site, and we have something like 300 hectares already under plantation, and those hectares will be used to bulk out to go up to the final farm size of about 8,000 hectares. Then the other aspect of the third strand of our strategy is around advanced biomolecules. So this is about improving. Well, the first two elements of the strategy have been very much around improving the yields of the biofuels. The third element of the strategy is about improving the molecules themselves and making the molecules themselves a better and more compatible more compatible with existing fuels and with existing vehicles and infrastructure. The flagship in this is biobutanol. This is we're working with DuPont, and we have a JV now called Butamax, which is working to develop and commercialize biobutanol effectively as a licensing business model. And as part of that, we have constructed and we are in the process of commissioning a biobutanol pilot plant up in BP's petrochemical site in Hull. And then alongside that, we are also building a commercial scale wheat to ethanol plant again on that site, and the with the intent that that plant will be one of the first plants to be retrofitted to biobutanol, to commercially demonstrate the biobutanol technology. And we're looking at producing biobutanol from a range of feedstocks, so of wheat, obviously, corn, sugarcane, but then going forward, cellulosic feedstocks as well. And this is augmented by our relationship with the universities of Berkeley and Illinois in the Energy Bioscience Institute. So that's what we're doing. I suppose the key question is, why are we doing this, and what is the underlying rationale behind all this? So we look at biofuels and look at the various opportunities in biofuels through four key lenses. And from our perspective, it is critical to differentiate between good biofuels and bad biofuels. And these are the four lenses that we use and attempt to use to try and do that. The first one is low cost. Yeah, we believe that biofuels in the long term have to be low cost, have to be competitive with conventional fuels. They cannot be forever dependent on long term regulatory support. Sugarcane ethanol today is competitive with oil at about $40 a barrel. We see cellulosic ethanol reaching that point by 2020. Significant cost reductions in the enzymes, but also in capital costs and reduced feedstock costs through yield improvements. There has to be low carbon, and again the graphic on the bottom right shows you the greenhouse gas emission performance of the range of biofuels. It has to be scalable. I made the point about biofuels delivering at really significant scale going forward, and clearly they have to be sustainable. Biofuels are receiving regulatory support, and a sine qua non of that regulatory support is they have to be sustainable. That covers not only carbon, but it covers other aspects such as water, such as biodiversity and social aspects. So I think I'll wind up there. A lot of information, a lot of challenges here, but I hope I've given you some flavour of what we're doing in this space and some of the underlying rationale. Okay, thank you very much.
Third is Sam Cuthbert.